Hey everyone, and welcome back to another incredible episode of Prison Counts Podcast, where we take you inside the criminal justice system and what it's really like to spend life in prison. I'm your host, Ryan Ferguson, here, as always, with my good friend and co-host, Dave Dowling. Dave, how you doing?
Real well. Good to be here again. I'm excited about our guests, which is us. What could be more
what
exciting
great guests.
Than just hearing me talk and blather on? Excited to hear what I have to say.
I love it. Me too, Dave. I'm always excited to hear what I have to say. And then I hear it and I'm like, wait a minute, that wasn't, I don't know, I guess I shouldn't have been. But this is actually really cool for us. This is our 10th episode. We want to check back in with everyone and answer a lot of your questions. One of the ones that's been coming up more often than all the others is just, what is a typical day in prison like? And I, you know, having lived in prison for so long, you forget that that's like, oh, people really wonder about that. But it's a great question. And we're going to kick it off with the difference between a typical day in the county jail versus a typical day in prison and why you're in one or the other. It's very unique and interesting. And a lot of times people don't know the difference. I certainly didn't. It is a very tough thing to learn firsthand. Dave, typical day versus in county versus typical day in prison. How do you see that?
Well, a typical day when you've been arrested and you went through the, you know, getting your fingerprints, getting pictured, you come in, when you get in that first room where everybody's just waiting to go to a cell somewhere or be released, one or the other, and it's a pretty smelly room. People are mostly drunk or coming off drug binges or what have you. Everyone's
pretty
raw. Oh, you
got some crazies in there. Boogers on the walls. There's like blood in there. Pee all over the place.
It's pretty gross.
Have fun.
In the county jails in a city or a big county like I come from, it's, you know, there's generally be 80 people in there. There's about five phones. Two are generally broken. You're trying to call somebody. You know, people are getting upset, trying to sleep on chairs, all kind of stuff. You know, you got no shoes. Nobody's got any shoestrings. Nobody's got anything. I mean, it's pretty rough, you know.
Wait. No shoestrings.
Yeah, they'll take your shoestrings. Why are there no shoestrings? Well, they don't want you to hang yourself in the bathroom, you know. So they don't take your or strangle anybody with them. So they'll take your shoestrings and belt and wallet and all that. Then if you're like me and you know that this time you're going to go to county jail and you're likely going to prison. There's people in there like that. There's people who've never been arrested before. And there's people crying on the phone. You're running into some other dirtbags that you know. You know,
Frank,
giving each other a look like, damn, you again. Every time I see you, my life's in disarray. Damn. So then they'll process you, take your clothes, put you in the jumpsuit or what have you. Most places have like an orange jumpsuit and some places have top bottom jumpsuits, grays, but they're generally pretty snug or pretty big because they don't really care, you know. So then you get to where you're going, and then you either for a couple of first days, if you're like me, you're sleeping one off. So, you know, so when I got there, I was pretty wrecked. You know, this is about 20 years ago. So I'm pretty wrecked from a pretty long binge and such. And when I came out of the cell, I came out of my cell the first time because somebody was slamming their dominoes on the table real hard. Oh. Bang, 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 and yelling and screaming at each other. So I finally got up and came out of the cell and snapped and got my first fight. Bing, bing.
Right there. That'll do
right.
It.
Scruffled around a little bit. I ain't going to claim any wins on that one or losses, but we got maced and broke up and got myself together. Now, I still got in a couple more fights in county jail because county jail is pretty erratic. You know, they don't have the structure like a prison does. People are coming and going a lot, so the wing is constantly changing. So there's no like people to solidify the wing amongst the inmates and keep it, you know, sane for a while. Because a lot of times it's the inmates that keep the wing sane, you know.
Right. And there's no peace in there. I mean, it's, you know, county jail, I don't know if this is your experience. I'm pretty sure it is. Everyone else that I've discussed it with, it's generally their experience. But county jail, it is very transient, but they also give you so much less than prison. I mean, the lights never go off. The noise never stops.
Yeah,
they basically starve you. You never get to go outside. You don't get contact with outside people very much. You can't really fight your case because they don't give you resources. I mean, it's really, really bad in the county jail. And a lot of those things that they deprive you from, you actually get in prison.
Yeah. One of the worst things they'll deprive you of, even worse than in prison in county jail, is any kind of medical attention.
Oh,
like I had an impacted molar. Like I had my wisdom tooth that come in was impacting my molar, and it was excruciating. So I had to basically just beg and plead, make a scene till they finally took me down to the dentist. And I mean, that kind of pain that starts at the top of your head and goes all the way through your neck. I mean, ooh, it was so bad. I couldn't chew. I could barely swallow. So they're like, oh, we can't just pull it. We got to send you out to this oral surgeon. So finally they sent me out to this oral surgeon. I suffered for about a week with this. I mean, it was so bad. Anyway, they sent me this oral surgeon. At the time I had a little scar on the front of my tongue, right? And it was like a little dot. And he pulled the tooth and stuff. And he said, well, he pulled the tooth and stuff. And he said, what's that on your tongue there? I said, well, you know, I got hit in the mouth and it busted my tongue. And it's just been a scar ever since. He's like, yeah, well, it looks funny. I should do a biopsy on it. And I'm like, what? What's that? He's like, oh, it's nothing. I just cut it and we'll take a sample of it and two stitches and won't really hurt at all.
Is that why you have a lizard tongue nowadays?
It is. So anyway, to make a long story short, they sent me out and they sent me back. Well, this guy gassed me, put me out or whatever. When I woke up, the transportation officer's like, dang, Dave, you all right? Well, this guy had cut my tongue in half, like, ooh, all the way around. I had like 24 stitches all the way around my tongue. Right. So I woke up and I couldn't feel anything yet. And the transportation officer who knew me was like, damn, Dave, he cut your tongue in half, man. I'm like, what? He's like, it's bad. So he brought me in a mirror and it was just like jagged Frankenstein scars. All right. You know, stitches, I mean, all down my tongue. I'm like, oh my God. So I tell him, he comes in like, hey man, I can barely talk. Like, you're going to have to give me something for this pain. You know what I mean? You got to make him give it to me. He's like, oh, I got you. Don't you worry. I'm like, why'd you cut me so much? He's like, well, I just wanted to make sure. Da, da, da. Well, they send me back to the county jail and I lay down for a while. And I wake up and this thing's horrible pain. So the nurse comes in, they call, they're now, you got wristbands on that you wear to kind of show who you are, at least where I was. They usually have some way of identifying, yeah, you. In prison, they got an ID. In county jail, they got like a wristband system. So I go wait in line to this nurse and everybody's getting their little meds and she's got a cart. So when I get up to the cart, I show her my wristband and she says, I don't have anything for you. And I'm like, look at my tongue. Hey, you gotta call downstairs or something, call the doc, you know, right now. You know, she's like, I don't have anything for you. Move on. In a real rude way, you know, I'm like,
oh yeah.
I try to stay calm. So I go over to the CO who's standing there. His name was Williams. I'll never forget him. Older guy. He was a real special fella.
Oh, I said, yeah. Hey. I remember a few.
Yeah. And I said, hey, man, look at my tongue, sir. You need to call that doctor. He's like, does she have anything for you? I said, no, but look at my mouth. You need to call downstairs. He says, stop being such a pussy and get your ass back to your room.
Jesus.
And at that point, I lost complete control over myself and stepped over and I just kicked over the whole freaking medical cart.
How'd that work out for you?
Well, she jumped back and screamed. The inmates started going wild and grabbing for the meds and stuff that were on the ground. And I turned on him and I just snapped. He called me a pussy, da da da. And I'm like, I was younger back then. I don't condone this type of activity when listening. But I ended up chasing him around the wing, right? When everybody going wild, screaming for me to get him. And finally, I just stopped and went back to my room. And they brought in the squad, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
And
it's
I'm
like, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in my cell. I got tears running down my face. I can't stand it. It was so bad. Anyway, they get to the cell and the guy leading it, who was like the sergeant's like, who's in there? And he's like, it's David Dowling. And he's like, what? Cause they knew, you know, I'm pretty actually calm in jail. You know, like I'm a respectful guy. Like I don't get into it with staff and stuff like that, but that really just pushed me over the edge. So he comes to the door and he's like, Down, what's going on? I'm like, they cut my tongue in half. You know, I'm like, I'm beside myself. So he's like, look, man, just get up and come out. Put your hands behind your back and walk out the door, man. We'll take you somewhere else. All right. Just relax. So I did. I got up and came out. And they took me down there. But at that point, they wouldn't give me any medical attention because all the nurses were pissed at me. So for 3 days, I sat there and it got all infected.
Oh.
And so I couldn't sip water or anything. Finally, another CO came to work because I've been begging them to help me and nobody would for days, you know. And it was like, it's as gross as it is. I could smell my own tongue. That's how bad it was. So finally, a CEO comes and he's like, oh, my God. He's like, are you all right? I'm like, oh, man, I think I'm going to die, you know. And please let me use the phone. And so he did. And I got out and called my mom and she called my lawyer. Next thing you know, there's a team of doctors up there and they say, oh, get an ambulance. So they have to rush me to Christian Northeast Hospital. And the doctor came in and freaking said, who did this to your mouth? You know, when I told him who it was, I don't want to say his name. But he sprays the stuff with, you know, like germ killer and just pus comes all out of my mouth. Ugh. He cuts all those stitches out and restitches it. And, you know, within a couple of days, it was fine, you know, because he did it correctly. But this guy had just, it was crazy anyway. I mean, I almost lost my, he told me about one more day, I had to cut your tongue off. I mean, that's, we couldn't be doing a very good show. You know what I mean? I'd be all over. And all I like to do is talk. So anyway,
yeah.
County jail's just more unstable.
Yeah. That sounds like the county jail to me. And it's crazy because obviously we don't condone any wild, crazy activities, but when you are treated like that, subhuman, they don't give you treatment. They don't take care of you. You're suffering. What can you do? I mean, if you didn't go crazy, you might not have a tongue today, right? You might not have received
that. Well, I mean, two things. If I wouldn't have went crazy, I wouldn't have got the tooth down. If I didn't go crazy, I might not have a tongue. When I got to prison, if I wouldn't have gone crazy, I wouldn't be able to walk now because I had to go crazy to get them to look at my back and fix my back. I mean, when you get to the point where they leave you with just nothing to lose, that's when it happens. You know, when there's nothing they can do to you that's worse than what you're going through, then that's when you become so unstable.
Man, see, and I had a similar, it wasn't as bad by any means, experience in the county jail, but I was there for 19 months. They never gave me any dental care.
That's a long county jail stay.
That is a long, long county jail stay. It was miserable. And yeah. I was trying to get dental care and some healthy food. That was it. And they never, never once gave me dental care. I actually had to go to court. So we filed a motion to get to the dentist, to get a tooth cleaning. I had to have two teeth pulled because they were abscessing. They were infected. You know, they were rotting because I didn't have any good medical care or dental care for over a year. So we got a court order to force them to take me to the dentist, right?
Yeah.
The day came where they're supposed to take me. I said to myself, I'm like, hey, are you guys going to get me? You know, I'm ready to go. They're like, oh, yeah. Well, something came up. We can't take you today. What? Okay. So call my lawyer. He's like, okay, I'll call you. So there's this whole thing. They go back and forth and all this stuff. So they reset it for like a week out. That day comes, nothing. Like they wouldn't even answer my. So long story short, they never took me to the dentist, even with a court order. They wouldn't do that.
Well, here's the thing. They don't care about your court order. What are you going to do to them? Court order doesn't really mean nothing to him. What's the penalty for us not following the court order?
Exactly.
I work here. I don't.
And then if you go crazy,
the county, I guess. Yeah.
Right. And if you go crazy, now you're going to get an extra charge. You're going to get like creating a riot, or you're going to get in trouble for, you know, trying to fight a CEO, something like that. You're going to go to the hole for another 2 or 3 months. You're going to suffer more. It's going to make you look bad. I mean, it's just, it's a lose-lose situation.
I'll tell you what's crazy.
Especially in the county jail.
When I get to prison, I'm there about 5 years or 4 or 5 years. And same thing happens on the other side of my mouth. I get impacted molar. Well, they send me up to the dentist. Okay, we're going to bring an oral surgeon in. They bring an oral surgeon in. You know who it is? The same guy that cut my tongue in half. I swear it. He comes in. I'm like, dang. I'm like, you remember me? Like, no. I'm like, I'm the guy you cut his tongue all in half.
Back the heck up.
Yeah. And he's like, do you want me to pull your tooth or not? I'm like, what choice do I have? All right, pull the tooth, you know? And I had to let him do it again, which he pulled the tooth fine. But I was like, man, this is like the Twilight Zone, man. I mean, it really is. It's so unreal. I mean, just like you said, getting a meal, you know, is like you have to wake up and eat breakfast just so you could ever eat fruit, because you're never going to get fruit at any other time except breakfast. So,
well, what's crazy too with meals is sometimes, and this is true with the county jail and prison, like sometimes – they just won't feed you. Like, it'll be mealtime. Nothing happens. They don't open the door. They don't bring you food. And you're like, what's going on? And you can't get answers. So 2 or 3 hours goes by, a CEO walks by, and you're like, hey, man, are you going to feed us? They're like, oh, yeah, something happened. That meal ain't going to happen. So you enjoy the next one. Like, but you're just not going to feed us?
Nope. What good corrections officers know is that a bad correction officer puts them in jeopardy and makes their life unsafe. And they know that. So they know there's these bad COs walking around baiting people and pushing people. And they try to police themselves just like inmates do, you know, because sometimes there was one guy, I can't remember his name, at JCCC, and he was causing all kind of trouble in the wing. And then when it kicked off and people finally had enough of him, well, the COs came in to help, and he ran out of the wing, you know, and here's, and that happens. I mean, you know, there's bad people in every aspect of life, and there's mostly good people. Really, I've found that most people are actually good.
You know? I agree.
And, but yeah, there are those kind of guys that just get off on lording over other people. And then there's guys that are just there to do their job and try to be fair and consistent.
You know? Yeah. It's amazing how much you get to appreciate those people. You know, it's like, oh, you just see me as a human being and you're here to do your job and take care of our basic needs. That's cool. We appreciate that.
I appreciated them more than I did the over-friendly ones, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't mind you being friendly, but, you know, we're not buddies here, you know? But I can respect that you come in and do a consistent job, and you respect that I'm not going to give you a bunch of trouble during your day at work.
Yeah,
you know, and I might even help make the day easier, and you might help make mine easier if it's day-to-day normal routine stuff. You
for
know?
Sure, for sure. All right, so before we get too far in the weeds, a normal day in the county, I'll kick it off. Normal day for me in the county, you wake up at like, I don't know, there's two different days for me. So some days I would wake up at noon, and you'll see why at the end, but I would wake up at noon, and I was in a 8-man pod. It wasn't like open bay because it was a violent felon tank. Everybody had their own little cell. They, you know, they were terrified of everybody hurting each other. So the doors would open at 6. I would wake up at noon and I'd play some cards, some spades. I might play some dominoes. I'd do my little workout. And then 5 o'clock would roll around. And noon, by the way, is when they fed us lunch. And then so that was my breakfast. And then 5 o'clock would roll around. We'd watch a couple TV shows. Everybody had their TV shows they wanted to watch. We all kind of worked that out. Everybody knew what we were going to be watching.
Right. One TV in the wing. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, it's dangerous.
Sports versus movies. It's going down.
Exactly. And then we do that. And then like every night we'd play another game of cards or whatever, dominoes, who knows. And then you just kind of chill and talk or do whatever, play some chess. And then it's time to be locked down at 10:30. And that's when I actually spent most of my time awake and doing productive things. So once the wing locked down,
that's
this is why I would wake up so late, is I would read all night. I would study all night. I'd be trying to teach myself math or whatever I could get my hands on with books. And so that was my time where I really worked on myself from like 11 o'clock at night till 5 o'clock in the morning. And right before the sun would come up, and there was always a light on, but there was a big light and like a low light. So right before the big light would come on and the sun would come up, I would go to sleep. And the thing is, you can't really get away from the light, right? They give you, I was on a concrete block, cinder block. That was the frame, like as you would say. And then they gave us a plastic mattress and 2 blankets. That's it. 2 blankets, no pillows. So basically, you got to use 1 blanket as a pillow, sleep on this plastic thing, and then use the other blanket to cover yourself up and cover your face so you can actually get some sleep. And then you got to sleep through, you know, the doors opening and then bringing breakfast and then and everybody getting up and doing their thing.
Well, like you said, there's no structure in county jail. It's you kind of feel like you're in some kind of a, I don't know.
Oh, it's La La Land for sure.
Yeah, because your hours are all messed up. You're trying to stay up all night for the quiet, or you know, sometimes you sleep till noon. And
hours,
you
know, don't
it just throws your whole system
matter.
Off. I mean, and you got the stress of maybe I'm going to prison for 100 years. You know what I mean? That's sitting on your back. And when am I ever going to go home, if ever? And you know, not everybody's experience is like that. But when most county jails, like we said, have a floor where the charges send you to prison. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like with your charge, it'll send you to prison. But the craziest thing was, and I don't want to set anybody up, but it's just part of the story. But while I'm locked up for this stuff, my stepdad gets in trouble because he had an addiction problem. He's clean and sober now and cool, you know. But he had gotten in trouble for writing his own prescription. And next thing you know, my mom's got me upstairs in the go-to-prison place. My stepdad was downstairs and probably get probation place. My poor mom's a saint. Thank you, Mom, for getting us all back to good and walking us through that hell. You know what I mean? She really did. I mean, not my mom. I don't think any of them. I mean, it just,
yeah.
She's a rock. My mom's a rock.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. It's crazy. So is that what your daily life? Oh, one last thing with my daily life. Because I slept in the morning, people would always turn on Jerry Springer or the Maury Show. Oh, and I don't know if everybody listening has this experience, but if you fall asleep and you hear things, it seeps into your dreams. Yeah. And so I would like have these dreams where I'm on the Maury Show. You are not the baby's father. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, wait a minute. I haven't seen a woman in a year. Like, hey. Right.
Yeah. And I had a terrible attorney, you know, and she shows up to visit a week late. She's supposed to have been there the week before. And she shows up and she's noticeably intoxicated. You know?
Oh, my goodness.
So she's behind the glass and you go in like an county. You don't get any, you know, physical contact visits with anyone. So she's behind the glass and I can see she's had a drinking lunch and her hair's all disarrayed. I'm like,
did you
just wake up in the back of a Chevy Impala? I mean, are you serious right now? I mean, are you going to go talk to these people or what?
That's the attorneys that people get in the county jail, sadly enough. There's no resources.
Heck, when we went to the city to deal with my charges, she was coming back with these 25 and 30 year offers. And I'm like, why would I take the maximum plea? Why would I just accept that?
You can go to trial.
I literally saw the prosecuting attorney in the courtroom and said, hey, can you make a deal for me so I can plead out right now? Give me something realistic and I'll take it. And she's like, who are you? And I told her I was. She's like, I really can't talk to you. So I'm like, all right. Well, she comes back about 20 minutes later and says, hey, I'll give you some advice. Throw in a blind plea today, which means I'm pleading guilty without knowing what the judge is going to give me. She said, if you throw that blind plea in today, you'll get way better than if you keep dealing with me. And I said, hey, you're not trying to just kill me here, are you? She's like, I'm going to tell you at one time. So I melt over, and I don't know. She did seem sincere. So my lawyer came in. I said, hey, go tell her I want to put in a blind plea. She's like, no, wait. Let's just do it right now. I'm done. You know, I don't want to be sitting in county jail forever. You're going to give me what they give me. Well, I ended up getting 12 years from that lady. She came and talked to me, and the judge was a woman, that judge, and she gave me 12 years, right? So that was doable. That's 10. When we get to Clayton, I'm hoping they're going to match it. Clayton's in St. Louis County. I charged the same charge in St. Louis City and County. So really, they should have gave me the same time, but they didn't. We know that doesn't happen. I actually had too many supporters show up, and it kind of worked against me.
Oh,
you know, because then he gave a long speech and decided to, like, when they showed up, all my supporters, the prosecuting attorney in the county, thought they were my victims and took them all into a room and like, oh, all right, really? Who wants to talk? And they're like, no, we're here for David. You know, and he's like, all right, go back. So no one showed up. I didn't have any victim show up to make a victim statement, but I apologized to them all anyway. But that time I, of course, sobered up and reality was upon me. Anyway, he gave me 18 years. I ended up doing 15.
Yep. So transitioning from there, we've talked about what the daily life in county jail is like. It's Groundhog Day for sure. Time doesn't matter. You're just in this little like cinder block box. It's just over and over again. You never leave.
And you keep waiting for another date because they'll give you these court dates. And that day you're waiting for the call, and then they don't call you. And you're like,
right. But prison is different. So how is prison different, Dave? Like, what was that transition like
for you? I had a growing up transition, I could say. So I had been in trouble before for minor things and been to lower level prison before for, I think I did 2 years the first time, mostly in a lower security prison and then in a rehab, which actually got knocked off my record because I completed the long-term treatment, what have you, you know, and I walked the paper down afterwards. So I had been in county jail before. We had a place out here they used to call Gumbo, and it was like a mini prison. So you met all the crooks from around your area. And I was young when I was going through there, maybe do a county year or 6 months or something for minor in possession of alcohol, 8 counts or something, you know, when they finally get sick of you. Anyway, So by the time I got to prison, well, I had friends and family there. So my cousin Rob was there, and he was, you know, kind of a leader of St. Louis guy. So I didn't have to go through, like, when I got to prison the first time, like, trying to figure out and get to know people. I already had a group when I got there, you know, to St. Louis. We used to call them Southsiders. I still do, kind of, but it was different back then. It weren't really a gang. It's just where you were from.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I had all friends right off the bat. I didn't have to try to find a place to fit in. So anyway, when I came to these cases and I was going to a maximum security, now this was different, and I'd never been to a place where people never go home. So it was intimidating to go there, but I knew I would probably know some people, you know. And so when I got there, I did know some people, you know, and I don't know, I transitioned in pretty easily. All of a sudden now you go through RNO, which is, what's RNO stand for again?
I never knew what RNO stand for. I just know that you're not in population.
You're not in population. You get to, it's where you first come. It's where they, you know, kind of
acclimate you.
Right. They kind of figure out if you, because they, there's a system in prison where you're either a alpha, what is it?
Sigma
alpha.
Or gamma.
I don't think gamma. Is it gamma?
No, I don't think it is. Alpha, sigma.
Sigma's the lower. A sigma, and then there's a middle one. That means you can be in a cell with anyone. If you're a sigma, that means you're likely to be victimized.
And so yeah, I was always an alpha, because if you're unmarried and under 25, you're an alpha. No matter how nice you are, right, how little trouble you get in.
Right. Some of the guys that were alphas were not really alpha-like.
No.
And some of the guys that were sigmas were certainly not.
No. Yeah, I'm like, you're a sigma, you know? Dude? You are insane.
But I was always right in the middle. You know, I was always the middle guy. So they could move a sigma with me, in with me or not. I could live with anyone, which is not what I wanted to. Most of the time I could direct who I live with in my cell, you know. So when you get to prison, now you can stabilize. You start accumulating things, like in county jail, you don't have anything to cook with. You have no TV. In our state, this is nice, actually, you have a cell, and you have to have a cellie, but you have your own TV, you know. So you can have your own TV to sit in your cell and watch your TV. And JCCC was nice because you could put it right in the end of your bunk, you know, and had a little
tray. But for the record, in my mind, they give you the TV to appease you in the sense that they don't let you out as much.
Well, they use the TV as a management tool. It's definitely a management tool, you know, because, you know, if you're watching TV, you're entertained, you're quiet for the time you're watching TV, you know, with no TVs, you're out in the wing.
We're not going to open these doors and let you out. Here's a TV, right, though.
If you don't have a TV, then you're out in the wing more. You're probably gambling more. You're making noise, you know. They like you to be in the room, not cluttering around that wing so much, you know. A lot of times I have to call over to PA, hey, clear that wing out or I'm going to shut the wing down. So then people have to decide who's going to get out of the wing, you know, and go to their room. And then some people that have an easier time clearing out the room than others, but they kind of put it on the image for first, and then they'll say they'll lock the wing down or whatever. Things like during Super Bowl, especially if a team from your state is in it, can get so loud.
It's going down.
Yeah, it's going down. The noise is going to be crazy. You know, Kansas City won the Super Bowl a few years back. Oh, man. I have a lot of friends from Kansas City, you know, but there's always that, you know, St. Louis, Kansas City thing here in Missouri. And I've always been a kind of a well-known St. Louis guy. And one of my best friends, Junior Martin Brajas, he's a Kansas City guy. And we lived together, you know, he was my cellie, and he had all this Kansas City stuff in the room. By this time, St. Louis had no football team, so nothing to even argue back about. But, man, when they won the Super Bowl, he was intolerable. You know?
I can imagine.
Intolerable. Well, he got out the other day, and I just like to remind him that it was so nice to see Cincinnati beat your team. After that happened, I had nothing left. I just root against now, not even for.
It is funny how you get those relationships.
No offense, Kansas City fans. Hey, I'm not against you. I'm just against my friends from Kansas City.
Just the friends. Just my strong friends. Supporters that we know and love.
Right. But the structure is there in prison. See, when you get to prison, you got to get a job. You know, like, see, if you don't have a job, then you're locked in your cell about 21 hours a day.
It's miserable. Right? But it takes time to get a job. That's the thing. It's like you got to know people. You can't just go in day one and get a job generally.
Right. When you get, finally, they do all your blood work and stuff, and they talk to you for a second, look at your cases, and they decide you can go out in the GP, or they got to lock you up in administrative segregation, which means that they don't feel safe putting you on the yard. Like if you have a high profile sex case or something from that area, they're not going to feel too safe putting on the yard. No, they'll give you the chance. Like when the Southside rapist, they used to call him, I forget what his freaking name is, a little dirt bag. When they put him on the yard, every time he come out on the yard, they'd stab him, you know.
Well, he had it coming.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't feel any kind of sorry for him, you know. I mean, he raped like 50 women. Anyway, they finally ended up transferring him out of state because he wouldn't stay and check in, and he was going to get killed, and they didn't want that on him. So they sent him, I think, to Indiana or something. That's where he is now. So anyway, you get out into GP, and then at least in a maximum security, you're in your cell until you get a job. So then you got to try to find a way to get a job. And you get a job there, of course, by applying. And in theory, that's supposed to be the only thing you should have to do, fair play.
In theory.
And I should get that job. That's not how it works. You got to have a friend who works there for the good job, and he'll get you the job, you know. And which I was fortunate to be at a camp where they had really good jobs, you know. I mean, they had jobs where you could work on computers. I actually read books to be put on MP3 and CDs for the blind. And that was cool because I had my own little sound booth and stuff, man. I had like a big setup, you know.
No wonder you're right at home in a podcast booth.
Well, I mean, I don't know, but it was fun, you know, and I learned a lot about how to talk into the microphone and stuff. And of course, I got into music then because generally most prisons have a music room. And, you know, I got into playing music and being a part of a band, and, you know, I learned how to play guitar. I worked all the time. That's what kept me out of trouble. So I had this structure now where I got up at about 5, ate my breakfast, went and worked out, went straight to work, came back, talked to some of the fellas, went to my Christian services, you know, and it just flowed every day, you know, every week. That's how my time went.
It is so different. I mean, people, there is a structure and people have a lot of time. Like when you're looking at 20, 30 years or life, you're like, okay, I got to build my life in here. I got to have my routine. I got to have my jobs. I got to have the things that I do. Whereas the county jail, there's none of that. And that is a big reason why there's a big difference.
There's fear and despair in a county jail. Fear and despair. And there's that in prison too. But at the same time, people will wonder, well, people think to themselves, what if that happened to me? Man, if I got a license, I'd just kill myself. Well, you say that and then you get one and you know what? Killing yourself still seems like a horrible idea. And let me tell you, we call this show Prison Counts for a reason, right? Because your chance for redemption, whether you're ever going home or not, is there. You know, I mean, I know I still have friends that are doing life without parole, and deservedly, but they spend their time trying to help others and they get a good feeling out of that, you know, and they have really no ulterior motive really, but to just
none. No, they have no ulterior motive. They could be doing anything they want in there. They could be wasting away, not doing anything, laying in bed or playing basketball. But a lot of the people that we were friends with that might not ever get out, and people who will get out choose to do good, which is it's awesome to see.
You know, I could never hear anything about myself. I used to play that blame game with everything. If you said something to me, I pointed out something bad about you. If you said something to me, I'd blame my upbringing, parents, drugs. I always had some blame where I wasn't responsible. And it wasn't until a couple of guys that had life without parole confronted me on that, where they had really no ulterior motive, you know, and that I heard it. That I heard what they had to say, you know, and that changed my life. I mean, that's what that really did. I mean, those guys who took their time to talk to somebody who they knew was going home someday and give it to me in the raw and tell me the actual truth about what they see about me. It was intense. I mean, it changed my life, you know, and I'll always be grateful to those guys.
Yeah, it is. You meet a lot of really interesting people in prison, not so much the county jail, but
what is such sadness? Guys who did something real bad one time when they're 18 and now they're 47 and never going home. I mean, that's hard to fathom. I think about myself 18, I'm 50 years old now. What if I'd have went there and I'd still did 32 years, you know, 40 years? I mean, I don't know. It's so, you know, they finally did a thing for the juveniles where they didn't want to give them life without. And I know some people are against it, but gosh dang, there's one guy that's in Missouri Department of Corrections who went to prison when he's 15. He's 62 right now. He's still there. Jeez. 15. His name's Ben Kemper. He's been there for, what's the math on that? 47 years? He's in his 47th year in prison? Now, granted, he did some pretty rough stuff.
He did some pretty bad things.
Yeah, I mean, he killed a whole family of people. He did. He was 15 years old. He killed a whole family. He asked a girl on a date. They're from a small town. to a dance, and she made fun of him. And he got up that night and walked to her house, killed the whole family and the dog. 15 years old.
That's crazy.
Right. So the town still comes out against him when he comes up for parole, you know.
And can you blame him? I mean.
No, I don't blame him. I mean, I don't, you know, I don't blame any victim for saying, I don't want this person. I don't. Hey, I'm a victim's advocate.
And that's why it's tough to like say, you know, a person should have a second chance or should get their life back when you also look at
the
victim's point of view. And
right. Because I know people that have done heinous things that got 12 years. You know, when I used to work for the Parents of Murdered Children through restorative justice, there was one woman there that this man kidnapped her daughter from a restaurant, beat and raped her, murdered her, and threw her in a freaking creek. And he got 12 years. He's home today. You know, he's home today. He got 12 freaking years. You know, he did less time than me. I've never physically hurt anybody
nonsense
crime in my life. You know,
like how does that happen? And that's the thing is, oftentimes we talk about
it's the deal, the
criminal justice system, and how it's messed up in terms of giving people too much time. But it also happens the other way, as the case you're just talking about. That person did not get enough time. I will argue that all day, every day, until the end of days. I mean, there are people in there who should be in there much longer, but there are people in there who shouldn't be in there at all. And it's just right. Like it's a weird discussion to have because there's
it'll
so
never
many.
Be perfect because we're human beings and human beings don't make anything perfect, but that doesn't mean we can't keep trying to improve it and improve the goal of the system and improve the humanity of it, but also keeping it as punishment because, you know, in the end of the day, it's punishment. You need to be punished. Yeah. You know, you do something bad, you have to fear consequences because criminal understands one thing, consequences.
Well, and that's, you know, and we also, that's why we're big advocates of there being programs in prison to help people. Because if you give people those opportunities, a lot of people will go and take those opportunities to become better people, to learn, to grow, to
certainly.
Be productive members of society.
I talk to guys like that every day. They email me and thank me for what I did for a mom in prison. That means a lot for me that they remember that, you know, because I did go out of my way a lot to you know, I worked hospice, man. I used to sit with people while they died of cancer, you know, especially at a maximum security. A lot of people are dying of old age and they do die and they die up in a room usually by themselves and they have no family left. They've been down a long time. But you go in there. I mean, when I was doing hospice and you see this pathetic individual lying there and you know, he's not going to make it. And I don't know. I just called to action. You know, I'd clean them up and do for them what I could and sit with them until they die. You know, there's like two dying rooms at Jeff City where you got cancer. When they move you to that room, that's the last room you're going to live in, you know? So there's people that worked at, and I was one of them. And I got up there. I remember I was sitting with this one man, and he was a Catholic, and he asked me if I'd prayed a rosary with him. And I said, yeah, all right, you know. So every day I'd come in. He was dying of cancer. And I'd pray the rosary, and he was getting weaker every day. Anyway, I came in on a day, and he was really unresponsive. So the nurses were like, hey, if he stops breathing, when he stops breathing, come tell us. You know, I mean, that's a hell of a thing to hear, you know. Hey, when the guy in there dies that you're sitting next to, come get us. So I'm sitting there with him, and I said, I can't remember his name. It was a Spanish name. Anyway, I said, I'm going to say Rodriguez, but it probably wasn't that. Mr. Rodriguez, can you hear me? And he didn't make any moves. So I just prayed rosary anyway because he was breathing in and out, and I'd take this little Q-tip swab, and I'd put the stuff on his mouth so he wouldn't get mouth sores and stuff. Cause just cause they can't speak doesn't mean they don't still feel pain. And then I'd roll them up on their side and put chugs so they wouldn't get bed sores and stuff. So that was kind of my job. Clean them up if they made a mess. I mean, it sounds pretty horrible, but I don't know. I did it. So I prayed a rosary on him. He hasn't said it. They expect him to die any minute. And there's a TV in the room. And honestly, I'm watching the Cardinals game. I sit next to this guy, make sure he's okay. And something touches my arm. And it startled me because I've been in here for a couple hours now. It startled me. And he said, David, God forgives you all your sins for being so nice to me. And that's the last thing he ever said. Isn't that crazy? Wow. Yeah. And I was like, hey, wake up. All of them? Did he say all of them? He didn't leave anything? Everyone? Yeah, but that was the last thing he ever said. He died about 2 hours later. I don't even know how he croaked it out. It was pretty incredible.
And that's the thing about prison is there are so many different things that you can do and get into, and a lot of them are good. Or you can go out and play sports all day, or you can go work all day, you know.
You still got a choice, you know. You can be a decent individual, or you continue on being a criminal, you know. And you And I chose when I got rock bottom right there that I didn't want to be a criminal anymore. I didn't want to live like that anymore. I didn't want to harm anyone anymore. When that court day, when all those people were in there to support me and how devastated they were by my choices, I didn't think of any of that when I made my decisions to commit crime. I didn't think of what it did to anyone who loved me. And all of a sudden, there it was. Boom. My mom on the stand pleading, crying, begging. My mom begged for my life so much on that stand that what do they call the lady that takes the notes? She was crying so hard they had to stop so she could catch up because my mom had broken everybody's heart in a way. Wow. It was the most horrible experience of my life. I'll never go through it again.
I mean, you won't forget that day.
If you're out there thinking of doing something wrong, think about your mom, you know, or your kids, and you know what it's going to do to them. Don't be so selfish like I was. It's a terrible way to live.
Yeah, and on that note, you know, we're running out of time. We hoped you enjoyed hearing a little bit about the county jail and prison. Obviously, we could go on and on and on. I mean, we lived there for 10, 15 years each, and it's just that was our lives each and every day. And those days changed. Some days we were in the hole. Some days I tutored. Some days I didn't have a job. Some days, you know, I just basically worked out all day or sat out on the yard and walked around and smoked cigarettes all day. You know, there's so many different lives that you live in 10 years.
Let me just touch a couple of things. People ask about drugs in prison. Yes, there's a lot of drugs in prison. Well, how do they get in there? Well, they get in there through the visiting room. Some get in there through outside sources. Like
most are coming in through the guards, right? I mean,
I don't know about most because I've seen them come in through the laundry a lot. Like they send laundry out. I mean, some of these guys are really,
that's true.
You know, they're really, what do you call it? Like together. Like, they have a system. We had a dog program there. Somebody sent a bunch of dog toys. Inside all the dog toys was balloons of heroin.
No.
I mean, you just can't imagine. I mean, then they mail it in because I guess they can spray this K2, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hallucinogenic. You could just spray it on the paper, and then when it gets there, you just cut the paper up, right?
And you eat it?
People like to do that drug in prison because it doesn't come up in your urine, so you can't get a dirty urine, right? But they go out of their minds on this stuff and fight each other and fight the police. It's the most dangerous thing in the world. Don't quit with the K2. Nobody knows what it is. It can be anything. You don't know what you're smoking, but it's a very dangerous drug, and it comes in right through the mail, which clogs up everyone's mail. Like, so now you can't hardly get a letter. If it smells a perfume on it, they'll send it back now. You can't, you know, any type of – the mail is the situation anyway. That's why they got emails now. A lot of places in a lot of states have little tablets with email. But, yeah, people ask me a lot about that. And, yes, sometimes it is staff. I mean – and a lot of times I've seen them get caught. So if you're a staff member listening, it ain't no fun when the rabbit's got the gun. And you better be careful because you will get in the newspaper. Your life will be ruined. You know, I've seen people lose their children over it and all kinds of stuff. So I would say stop while you're doing it and move on.
What else you got, Dave? We got to get rolling.
All right. I got a lot of people I want to shout out to. I want to talk.
Shout out. Who are you shouting out?
I'm going to shout out Misty Zane. She sends me a lot of stuff about her court dates and stuff, and she's real supportive of the show. You know, I want to shout out Kay Sanders, who wants me to talk about Daniel Holtzclaw's case. And if you're listening, check out Daniel Holtzclaw's case. He was a police
officer in
Oklahoma. And we'll talk about that another time. We are going to get to some talking about other people and maybe advocating some for people, but we're working on it. We only got a little bit of time for a show and we have to make choices. So be patient. If I said I was going to look into it, I'm going to look into it. My yes means yes. My no means no. I'm working hard. I'm trying.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, thanks again for joining us, everyone. We're going to talk about this more as time goes on and other people's stories, more of our lives and what it's really like in prison is going to keep coming out. It's just so multifaceted. It intrigues me, and I was there for a decade. It's a weird world. But please share this podcast with a friend or anyone else you think who might like it. We're doing this, you know, just to get the message out and give people a voice. But thanks again for joining us. I'm on Instagram at LifeAfter10. You can find me Twitter and Facebook and all that jazz. Dave, where do we find you?
You can find me on Facebook. Just David Dowling. You'll see me and my lovely bride-to-be and family. And friend me up, follow me, or you can get me at Dave Dowling 526111 on Instagram and follow me and chat with me and send me questions, and I'll get to you as soon as I can. I usually answer every one up to this point, and I get
it. You're on top of it. I need to.
Yeah, I do like to talk to people. I do like to hear what you have to say, and I like your criticisms and I like your praise, you know, and I like both. So I think about both. I want to answer all your questions, and as we go on, I will.
All right, everyone. Thanks again. We'll see you next week.
That's right. See you account time.